Country, playing now through October 13th at the Imago Theater in Portland. Whiskey Dixie and the Big Wet Country is a raunchy outlaw country musical about a sexually frustrated cowgirl on a tragic comic ride from hell who will do whatever it takes to get off. Written by local award-winning and Grammy-nominated songwriter Amanda Richards and directed by Sarah Pope, this off-color comedy offers a feminist perspective into a world of dive bars, drunks, and country music. Again, that's Whiskey Dixie and the Big Wet Country, playing now through October 13th at Imago Theater, 17 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Warning, the following message is only for listeners who contributed during KBOO's Fall Membership Drive. If you did not contribute to KBOO's Fall Membership Drive, please turn off your radio now.
On behalf of the entire KBOO community, we'd like to offer our deepest and sincerest thanks for your contribution to KBOO's Fall Membership Drive. Your support makes KBOO possible. Thank you.
If you didn't contribute during KBOO's Fall Membership Drive, you may now turn your radio back on.
It's not too late. Go to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution right now.
Then the next time this spot plays, you'll be able to listen.
It's 11 o'clock. It's 11:01 here at KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for the Recovery Zone coming right up.
Hi. Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland Community Radio. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is The Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. My guests today are going to talk about healing our world with fungi. That's right, fungus, mushrooms, mycelial networks, and according to Peter McCoy, founder of Radical Mycology, we've been neglecting this world for far too long. Radical Mycology is a grassroots organization dedicated to working with fungi and getting the word out about how they can help us out. Their annual Radical Mycology Convergence is another way to get people together around mushrooms, and this year it's taking place from October 12th to the 14th, just 25 miles south of Portland in Malina, Oregon. And there's lots of information on their website about this. It's called the RadicalMycologyConvergence.com. And so right now I have three organizers who are working to make this happen. Peter McCoy is on the telephone, right, Peter?
Yes, I am.
Oh, there you are. Great. Okay. And Jason Scott is here with me in the studio with Laura Kennedy. And I just to let you know a little about them, besides founding Radical Mycology, Peter has also written a huge 700-page book called, of course, Radical Mycology, and then added a treatise on seeing and working with fungi. And it's been called, actually, the most comprehensive book on mycology ever published. He's also started an online school on mushrooms called Mycologos. And Jason Scott actually contributed to this book. He's a mycologist, an ethnobotanist, and a spagyricist, and is founder and curator of Feral Fungi and Alka Mycology. I think feral fungi has to do with medicines, right?
Yeah, making mushroom extracts.
Okay. And Laura Kennedy is a forager, a permaculturist, a medicine maker, and an educator, and is also the co-owner of a medicinal herb and mushroom farm called Rise Up Remedies. And welcome, Laura.
Thanks.
Okay. So basically welcoming each of you to KBOO, and start out, let's just talk a bit about the Radical Mycology Convergence. How long has this actually been going on? And I guess, Peter, you know that, right?
Yeah, so the first convergence we had was in 2011 up in Skagit Valley, Washington, sort of remote. The following year, in 2012, we had our second, and now it's actually a biennial. So we do it every other year to kind of make it even more special.
Okay, biennial, yeah.
Yeah, and then along with that, we try our best to jump it around the country because the knowledge and the information is so rare and generally inaccessible for most folks. We try to bring it to people as opposed to you know, making them have to come to us kind of thing. But this year we are happily back on the West Coast in our roots, mycorrhizal roots, if you will. I'm a Portland native, so it's nice to bring it back to sort of the home state. And yeah, we're really excited. This is our fifth one since 2011, and it's by far our best in many respects. I mean, everyone is quite wonderful and, you know, incredibly memorable, I feel, for me and everybody that attends on for many reasons. But in some respects, sort of just our organizational capacity and all the sort of new aspects and dynamics and, I guess, production value of the event this year makes it, you know, much better in that respect. So I'm incredibly excited for
and
everything.
And the people that go to it, it's all kinds of different people, basically, right? I mean, fungi enthusiasts and people who are kind of more philosophically bent and people who are more into cultivating. I mean, all kinds of different energies are showing up at this event, right?
Yeah, so our emphasis has always been not so much on foraging, which is definitely part of the event, but because that gets most of the attention in the mushroom world of just picking mushrooms and eating them, we focus on all the other ways to engage with and appreciate fungi, from cultivating them, from applying them in landscape to try to deal with degraded land and chemical pollution and things like this, to some of the more etheric and metaphoric but also culturally significant relationships humans can have with fungi and even learn from them. It's something we hold quite dear and see as really having great value in working with these really amazing organisms that is generally sort of sidelined to the just more practical can I eat it kind of thing. So right. We try to cover the ground that is overlooked and all the ways that the fungi really can work with us and teach us, as they say.
And I noticed there's all kinds of different workshops. There's something called MycoHack that I want to ask about, a barter fair, a culture swap, something called Mush Love, which has to do with art and music, Myco Olympics, cultivation stuff, remediation stuff. So, Jason, I'll turn to you. What are some of the highlights for you of this whole event?
Yeah, well, as Peter was kind of mentioning, this year is going to be much bigger than it's been in the past, and we've included a lot of different events, including the Myco Hack and the Myco Olympics, which are just kind of fun ways for people to engage in what the Myco world has to offer and to make it fun and make it something that people want to come to and want to also enjoy on more of just a personal level, as opposed to just going and sitting through workshops and learning on an intellectual level. We want to engage people.
So it's not just like regular school. It's also a party, sort of.
I wouldn't say party, but it's going to be way more fun than regular school. You know, the Myco Olympics is going to be an event that we're hosting, and we'll have teams of people that are doing all sorts of different kind of mushroom-related Olympic events, kind of like games and stuff like that. People will team off and people will kind of be able to engage with each other and play these games. We're going to have like a relay race where people are doing different sorts of transfers from grain to grain, and that's just kind of like a take on turning the cultivation aspect and the intricacies of that into a game for people to enjoy on another level. And then every year too, we also have the talent show, which is a cornerstone of the Radical Mycology Convergence. And that's where everybody comes together on Saturday night and just shares either something that is really, really beautiful and talent filled or something fun and engaging with the audience. And it's always a great time.
That sounds great. And how about you, Laura? What some of the highlights for you?
I'm really looking forward to Mush Love, which will be the art show.
Uh-huh.
We're holding it in the barn at the farm where the event is, and we'll have a bunch of different international artists, people from France and people creating art from nearby as well. Additionally, I wanted to just like describe Myco Hack a little bit more, which is modeled after Farm Hack. And so it'll be sort of a discussion with a bunch of different people about how to create cultivation tools for mushroom cultivation, which there aren't very many tools out there that you can just easily purchase to grow mushrooms. So it'll be a conversation with growers and people both new and also experienced in mushroom cultivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so cultivating mushrooms then is a big part of what got radical mycology and this whole thing going.
I'd say that that was definitely probably one of the things that set us apart, I guess, which wasn't anticipated when we first started doing this. You know, initially the first convergence was just to try to bring people together around looking at fungi in just different ways, sort of gets into the radical notion of thinking outside the box on many fronts, but also contextualizing all those relationships in social dynamics, environmental contexts, and, you know, some of our pressing issues of today, and seeing how fungi, you know, really are sort of this overlooked tool in the toolbox, if you want to think about them from that aspect, and teaching those skills. And again, at the time, we didn't realize that was quite inaccessible. Most mushroom events, even today, focus on can I eat it and how do you identify it, which is great, and it's a great way to get people involved. But there's so much more nowadays that just the last decade of the internet and what have you has enabled the expansion and really a massive and much more hands-on and sort of deeply rooted mycological culture or subculture, if you will, or just sort of loose-knit network of people that really care about this topic and all that it has to offer, but always had a hard time sort of coming together. And so we brought out the cultivation, the remediation as a big highlight at the first one. But now as the years have progressed, we realize that that's still a cornerstone of the event and what we sort of do more broadly, but also just all these other aspects to fundamentally build a community and a culture, or I like to say a mycoculture, you know, where people aren't afraid to share this passion. They maybe in their hometown, they're the only person that's into mushrooms, but here they're surrounded by new friends that all share their interests. And that's really empowering. And, you know, and for some people I've met, quite life-changing, because they didn't know that there was others like them, kind of thing. And that was there at the first convergence as a really fundamental point of just building a sense of community. And now we just try to elaborate on that through all these different discussions and like Jason was saying, and Laura, new events. All these ways to stimulate discussion and teach people not just new skills, but new ways to relate to each other as well as the fungi.
Yeah, and it's even like, to me, it seems like it just blends things like in sort of ways that you would never think of. Like a woman named Caitlin Bryson's going to be doing an art show that combines remediation work with creating art, and somehow people are all going to be participating in that. And it just sounds like it's like a lot of different ways of looking at mushrooms. But Peter, I read a quote by you: "We're in a fungal world, swimming in a lack of mycological awareness." And so, what's the deal with that? I mean, and you've been apparently into fungus and fungi and mushrooms and stuff ever since you were like a kid. Why have they been neglected, and how have they been neglected?
Well, there's a great phrase that was said by one of our great mycologists, professional mycologist David Hawksworth, that mycology is a neglected mega science. So it's a massive topic, massive science with huge ecological and environmental implications because of how important fungi are in the natural world, but also economic and you know, cultural implications for how they could alleviate food shortages and reduce our waste and also deal with pollution, as I've mentioned. And all this wraps under this massive topic of mycology, the study of fungi, but it's completely overlooked. It's one of the least accessible sciences, one of the least studied. Mycology departments are closing around the world rather than opening as they should be. And it's actually a real concern amongst professional mycologists about the future of mycology, which is why it's one of the few sciences where the amateur is actively and really critically encouraged to deeply participate and add to the science. There's so much we don't know, and there's so much the citizen scientist, if you will, could really add to our body of knowledge, from naming new species to all these applications we could go deeply into. And so this is something that I didn't realize when I started studying mycology when I was 15. It was just another curiosity to me. But what I realized over the years and sort of why I've come to do what I do is that, especially early on when I would try to talk to friends or family or new acquaintances about my interest, I realized that most everybody didn't know how to relate to that. They'd give me sort of a blank stare, and maybe they'd feel uncomfortable, or I'd feel uncomfortable. And I came to realize it's because culturally, it's one of our biggest knowledge gaps. We never learn about fungi in any level of education, even on higher degrees. People might only get a day or two of mycology in 4 years of environmental studies. which is really incredible when you actually look at the topic and you see fungi are, you know, critical. They are the keystone organisms of pretty much every ecosystem. They are so critical to all of life, which sounds, you know, out there when it's the first time you hear it. But when you actually look into the details and what science is now finally showing us in the, again, just last decade, you know, really new paradigms are presenting a whole new way to look at the world and seeing it as fungally designed and influenced much more profoundly, perhaps, you know, in different ways, but more significantly, perhaps, and fundamentally than the plants and animals. The fungi lay the foundation alongside bacteria, but in my biased opinion, more profoundly in some respects than bacteria and other microbes. Fungi really, really build so much of the world, and that's incredible. And then again, the applications are just coming to light, especially because cultivation's gotten so much easier in the last decade. So all this comes together at this really unique point in human history where we know all these things and we can actually teach them quite readily now, but people just don't know where to start. They don't know where to, you know, there's not even that many books on the topic, which is why I wrote mine and which is why we do the convergence, to just try to get the momentum, keep it going, keep it building, really.
Yeah, hence the convergence. I want to let people know you're tuned to KBOO Portland. This is the Recovery Zone. I'm speaking with three of the organizers of this radical mycology convergence that will be taking place October 12th to 14th in Molino, Oregon. You can find out more at radicalmycologyconvergence.com. I have Peter McCoy on the phone and Jason Scott and Laura Kennedy in here in the studio here with me. And if you're listening in and would like to give a call just to make a comment or ask a question, the number is 503-231-8187. And I have to admit that, you know, I mean, I think when I was young, I was reading mushroom books and finding out that people, you know, even super experts in mushrooms died. They ate the wrong mushroom and got poisoned. And then you think about mushrooms, like they're moldy, they're slimy. I mean, not mushrooms necessarily, but fungus and stuff. And so it's kind of got, and then there's the pathogens. I actually have a tree in my front yard that I think might be being killed by something called verticillium wilt, which is a fungal problem. But then I read that, oh, mycelial mats, they're really great. So they're, I mean, they've gotten kind of a bad rap, mushrooms and stuff, but you guys are really into, like, they're great, and they should actually be the model for the world, and I mean, things like that. And so, How can you sort of like come in and like you were saying that they're like a keystone species and this and that. How do we really get in there and start talking up mushrooms, like talking about what they're doing good for us? What are like some of the three biggest ways, I think, are personally, ecologically, and societally? That was what you had in your book, Peter. Those are the three biggest things that they do for us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Laura and Jason have some of their own reasons, but I mean, just briefly, you know, the historical perspective of fungi is essentially bad boils down to really their short introduction that people get in education. And so the emphasis is how they affect us economically through the very few fungi that attack commercial crops and, you know, timber. And so that gets the highlight because money, you know, moves the world today.
Right, we have antifungal remedies.
Right, and so that's pretty much the only perception. And then sure, molds come up and, you know, our food rots in the fridge even, and then we get upset about that. But in other parts of the world where different types of molds, the non-rotting molds, but sort of different types, create culturally significant fermented foods, the word mold actually has a completely different cultural connotation. It might even be positive as opposed to, you know, inherently negative like we have in the West. So there's many ways to think about fungi, even today and historically. And that's a lot of what, you know, I just try to do is point out there's many ways. I mean, it really depends on the person almost what to highlight for them and why it's relevant, because it's so easy to dismiss something you've never heard about. So it's about sort of curating that conversation a bit. You know, we can point to, I think most people can relate to trying to clean up pollution. Fungi do that in really powerful and unique ways.
Yeah, I want to talk about that.
Yeah, so I mean, there's so many ways. And I kind of already mentioned a few minutes ago, but that's why it's a whole weekend, but then the weekend's not even enough to really scratch the surface of all this huge topic offers.
Well, there's definitely going to be, let's start personally a bit here, there's going to be some workshops on medicinal uses of fungi, and you're kind of involved in that, right, Jason?
Yeah, so I'll actually be doing a couple workshops at the Convergence, and before I get into that too, I just wanted to add on to kind of what you were just mentioning there and what Peter was saying as well, and note that mushrooms inherently in nature and nature in general doesn't really have a biopic view, you know, it doesn't really see things as good and bad, and it's more about balance, right? So nature is always kind of trying to find this equilibrium or this balance, and so it, you know, there's things that we can look at and isolate and say, oh, that's a bad thing, like a fungal infection or the fungal infection in a plant, or that's a good thing, like the medicinal benefits of the mushrooms or the mycoremediation kind of thing. But I think really they're just filling their niche in the ecosystem, and so I just wanted to address that and kind of talk about that for just a minute, and bring in the fact that I think that the mushrooms bring in this kind of like equilibrium, and we have a lot to learn about how they work within the ecosystem and how they kind of bring that balance to the ecosystem, even in maybe some of the negative representations, and maybe looking at like why that fungal infection is in that tree and what's happening with the environment around it that it's created that, or something, you know, that I've heard Peter ask before too about the cordyceps and how they act. And cordyceps is a parasitic species of mushrooms that attacks insects and various different insects. And, you know, again, it's kind of striking this balance in the ecosystem. It doesn't seem like in any of those circumstances that it's eradicating the insects as a whole or making them go extinct, but more balancing the population so that it's more healthy for the ecosystem. And then just going in, since we're talking about cordyceps, into the medicinal mushroom aspect, the mushrooms have so much potential, and just kind of how Peter was mentioning of the fact that mushrooms and the science of mycology in general has been so overlooked in the past and not studied and not funded enough, that plays into their benefits as medicines as well. And a lot of our modern medicines come from roots in natural substances in plants and in mushrooms and in fungus. And a lot of our main antibiotics are actually extracted from different types of fungi.
With penicillin?
Including penicillin.
Wow,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. And so one of my biggest interests and curiosities into the whole subject is how do we look at mushrooms and how do we see how they're engaging with their environment, how they're interacting with their environment, and what that can teach us about how they work within our own ecology and our own ecosystem or our body, right? So that they can help with various different things. And they've been found to be super effective in really chronic illnesses and diseases, including neurodegenerative diseases in the cases of lion's mane specifically, but also reishi, and in cases of cancer, yeah. There's been a lot of research done specifically with the beta-glucans, and specifically in Japan. The Asian countries, again, have a lot more of an open mind about the potentials of mushrooms and have been using them traditionally for a lot longer than a lot of cultures in the West, which isn't universally true, but they have a lot more research kind of recorded. And the government actually uses an extract of the Trimedes versicolor, or the turkey tail mushroom, which is a pretty common mushroom found out in the woods here too.
The government in Japan.
They use a standardized extract of the polysaccharides of that mushroom in conjunction with radiation therapy and with chemotherapy to help keep the human who has that disease more vital through the process, increasing their immune function, and actually in certain cases it shows that it goes after the tumor itself. So there's a lot of research that's shown a lot of promise, again, kind of in the lack of research that we have as a culture, and specifically in the West, it's really lacking on what are the different compounds and actions of the mushroom that they have in them. And then I also think taking that myopic view of saying like it's this specific compound, or it's just the polysaccharides, or it's just the triterpenes from these mushrooms, which are different chemical compounds. Like, we have to remember that that these compounds, they work within our body and they plug in with in our body, but the mushrooms aren't developing those for us. They're developing it for themselves in their own relationship with the ecosystem that they live within. A lot of times they're what they call secondary metabolites that the mushroom is developing, and those secondary metabolites end up having a benefit in our body, which goes back to, I think, kind of how Peter was talking about, of the evolution of mushrooms and animals and plants, and like the likelihood of why it is that mushrooms are so effective with us is because we've co-evolved with them for so long, and in fact they preceded us for a very long time in their full form before we even kind of walked onto the scene, evolutionary scene, so to say. So
yeah, in fact that was interesting. And maybe Peter or you or Laura, I learned that that mushrooms, like there's these taxonomies, I guess, and so plants are in one taxonomy, and animals are in another one, and fungi are in their very own. And they're actually closer to animals than to people, I was reading. Is that, have you guys heard of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe Peter can expand on this a little bit more too, but that's one of the reasons I started the Alchem Mycology Project, as I call it. I've done a lot of work in studying traditional ways of preparing mushrooms into different kind of extracts, and based on the work that I've been doing it off of and how I've been looking into it, there's traditionally three kingdoms that are recognized. It's the mineral kingdom, the plant kingdom, and the animal kingdom. And I really recognized that there too was a lack of, like, where do mushrooms really fit into this? And they were kind of like at the very least tapped into to the plant realm.
Yeah, which, people as think we know, of them as plants.
Right,
yeah.
Which as we know now on the kind of like current phylogenetic research isn't true, and that they are more closely related to humans and split a lot
later from plants.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the history of the evolutionary timeline, basically, very long story, of course, short, 4 billion year story short, places bacteria first, spontaneously occurring, we don't know how, and then thereafter something like a fungus evolved to eat the dead bacteria that had piled up, and those early fungi or fungal like organisms were the great ancestors of all animals and plants. That's really they had larger, more complex cells, and we evolved from them. Fungi evolved and split and eventually formed lichens with their first plant cells later on, and then more complex plants formed later. So lichens came before actual true plants. Plants evolved with fungi inside them. Later, the first animals evolved with fungal associations, it seems, as well. And then much later on, humans evolved from those early animals, but you see the animal came after the plant. So that's why we say we're closer to fungi, but it's almost misleading the way to think about it. It's like everything comes from fungi inherently and fundamentally. We just split off more recently, so we're younger than plants in essence, but plants are younger than lichens. Lichens are more. So this is one small piece of what I was saying early on about how they lay the foundation of all life today. It's because they actually laid the foundation of all life from almost the beginning of life on Earth, excluding bacteria, which are quite important, of course. But they do it in these ways, and these connected, netted, literally networked ways that bacteria don't typically do. Bacteria can form sort of macro structures and chain structures, but the way fungi do it and operate is quite different, to get into the details. But so this is what I get at. And then today when we look out, and this is good to the subtitle of my book of Seeing Fungi, what I meant by that is once you understand that fungi permeate 100% of all plant tissues, they form the skeleton of all plants, and very likely they are fundamental to the internal health of all animals. Now, there's some good evidence, especially say in the insect world, but increasingly even with humans, our internal fungi seem to have a huge influence on our immune system and its own innate functioning, but we've barely looked at that. This is a topic known as the mycobiome, as compared to the microbiome of the bacteria in our body. And it's crazy. We know so much more about, you know, the stars than we know about the fungi inside of the human body. But this is something we're starting to look at and certainly find that there's parallels between the health impacts they have on animals that we know much more about that they have on plants, which almost across the board is positive, as Jason was saying, and things. Yes.
We have a caller. What's her name? Jared, would you like to just ask your question or talk a minute?
Yes, I have a quick question. I'm like fascinated with mushrooms, but I've never been able to figure out what jobs I could get if I did study it. And I was just wondering if they could, your guests could touch on potential jobs or ways to make money by following that study. So I just had that question.
Anybody have an answer to that?
Well, it kind of depends on your own skills and specialties. The nice thing about mycology, as I said earlier, is there's so many ways to engage with it and add to it as a science, but that's, of course, different than making a living off it. Some of those common ways people do try to work with mushrooms for a living, in some capacity, maybe not their whole income. One easy route or easier route is just mushroom growing and farming, selling to markets and restaurants is increasingly popular all around the country and around the world. Again, because the skills have gotten so much easier in recent years. I'd say that's probably one of the most common ways, but then also foraging in the Northwest here is quite big business. Actually, it's thought that the wild mushroom trade is the biggest cash in hand economy, apart from the black market in the world. Tons and tons of money in wild mushroom collection and sales, but of course it's quite competitive. But that's also it is certainly a possible, especially in the Northwest here.
I heard somebody saying too recently that, and I don't know if this statistic is true, but I've heard that only 30% of the market for gourmet and edible mushrooms in Portland is met. And I think that's pretty common, whether or not that number is true. I think there's a huge market for, like Peter was talking about, cultivated mushrooms.
Yeah, so coming to the convergence and learning how to cultivate sounds like it might, there's a way to just become a farmer.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, so I just want to let listeners know again, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. This is the Recovery Zone. I'm speaking with three of the organizers of this year's Radical Mycology Convergence, Peter McCoy, Jason Scott, and Laura Kennedy. Peter is the founder of Radical Mycology and has authored a huge book with the same name. Jason apparently helped him write it as well. It explores mycology not just in terms of science, but also cultivation, remediation, history, and spirituality. Jason is founder and curator of Feral Fungi, and Laura is co-owner of Rise Up Remedies. The convergence takes place next month, October 12 to 14, in Molina, Oregon. It's about 25 miles outside of Portland, and you can find out more at radicalmycologyconvergence.com. And if there's any questions or anything you'd like to add, just call 503-231-8187. And Laura, are you sort of into medicine too with the Rise Up Remedies, or is that fungal, or is that...
Currently, I'm growing medicinal herbs, but mm-hmm. we have a plan to grow culinary mushrooms at my farm mm-hmm. And eventually sell to local herb shops.
Uh-huh. So you're going to be part of this whole making money off mushrooms thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. And so besides, I want to get just into a little bit, really simple, really basic, what we're actually talking about here. You hear fungus, you hear mushroom, you hear mycelial. What, just a real simple breakdown, what are we talking about with all of this, with mycology? Maybe Peter,
so fungi are distinguished from plants and animals. The simplest way to think about them different is that they do not have a stomach and they do not photosynthesize. So they get their food or their nutrition by releasing digestive compounds and then breaking down their food outside of themselves, and then they absorb the byproducts. Bacteria, by and large, do something similar, but fungi have larger, more complex cells, so they're more akin to animals and plants because of our cells are equally complex. 1% of all fungi, which we approximate nowadays is roughly 2.5 million species in the world, only about 1% or less form as yeasts, so single cells, and so they make our beer and bread and do other things in the environment. The vast majority of all fungi form as a network of tissue, and this network of tissue is called mycelium, and it's the white stuff you see when you roll over a log or a rock in the woods. microscopically, each thread in that network is a hundredth of a human hair, but collectively we can start to see it, and it's typically white. Out of that network, a mold will form its spores, kind of dusting the top of that, and then that turns green or black or blue, depending on the color of the spores. Or a mushroom will condense that mycelium into the big thing we call a mushroom, and it grows out of the wood or out of the soil, but it's essentially growing out of this network, which is something like roots, but performs very, very differently than plant roots. And the mushroom itself is actually just condensed mycelium. It's kind of interesting. It looks so different, but it's fundamentally the same tissue. It's not a different organ.
And the mycelium...
So I like to say that it's, you know, really, no matter what you're talking about with fungi, it's all about the mycelium by and large.
Yeah.
Because that's where all the work happens. That's where all the digestion, the decomposition, the remediation work happens. The mushroom is what we eat and make medicine out of, and can see and appreciate. But all the interesting ecological stuff is essentially mostly coming from the mycelium.
And the mycelium, it's kind of like one great big creature or a bunch of different little creatures? A mat?
Well, it's one big network of the same. It's like a big network of stem cells. So it's all the same type of tissue. It's very different from plants and animals, so it can be hard to wrap your head
around. Yeah.
But,
in fact,
it's one...
You were talking before, and I was thinking of myself as sitting here as sort of a giant, weirdly evolved mushroom or mycelial something or another. I mean, just that we've all come from fungi and things like that. But so these mycelial mats, they're basically something that's not an animal, not a plant, and a living creature, and they're very. They're very interconnected is the idea, and that's something to me that seems to be a big part of what radical mycology is all about, is sort of understanding and creating interconnection.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is one of the big lessons, you know, one of the earliest lessons most people get from looking at fungi is you hear about this network. When you learn that in the environment, this network connects hundreds or dozens of species together, especially plant roots together, and shares nutrients and information and maintains the whole ecosystem through this connection. There's a lot of metaphoric relationship we can see in human culture and human connections, and what we could build as a model culture based on how fungi exemplify this notion of interconnectedness and interdependence, which it seems to be very successful evolutionarily because they've been doing it for billions of years. So why don't we take a lesson and apply it to our disconnected, you know, modern lifestyles? And this is where we start, you know, where we started really in 2011. This is one of our big topics or one of the things we'd like to come back to in conceptualizing this relationship. But over the years, it's evolved and, you know, and get into even more etheric and further out and even more abstract connections. But there's a lot there. It just kind of takes a bit of unpacking and, you know, getting even deeper into the space of some of the biology and ecology. But it's also fascinating. And again, that relationship between fungi and plants. I mean, early on, plants were actually thought to be small animals. Then they were thought to be plants for a long time, and then they were only separated in the late 50s from plants. But still, we can, when you grow them and work with them, they are, in some respects, they act almost more like animals than plants if you have to compare. And through that dynamic and working with them and then learning about them, there's just a lot, I think, that inherently can be learned, can be gleaned, and just sort of epiphanies of I've had, but also many people I've met and I've learned, and my book tried to synthesize a lot of these insights and conversations I've had over a decade of talking about these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller again, Travis.
I'm here.
Hi, great. Well, what would you like to say?
Hi, my name's Travis, and I'm a big fan of the show. I listen to it every single day. But I had a quick question about fungi. Anyone can answer. This is an open board question. So, it's like throughout time and everything. I mean, I've smoked medicinal weed, and it's like weed just bogs me down, and it doesn't matter like what strand it is. It just doesn't do it for me. And then I've done mushrooms, just like going out and taking like nature trips and everything. And it just makes me think a lot more clear. Like I'm just wanting to know, it's like, is there what different avenues of like daily I forgot to add, I've done fasting and I'm about to switch my diet up, so I'm just trying to think a lot more clear-headed. and I'm just trying to see if there is any sort of like daily supplements that I could take that are fungi related that I can possibly try out.
Lion's Mane.
Lion's Mane, says Jason. How come?
Yeah, so Lion's Mane is one of the most profound mushrooms that I think almost everybody could benefit on being on every single day. For its neurogenesis properties. So it literally helps generate neural tissue in your brain and also in your gut. That I've had a lot of people who've been taking it have expressed that they're a lot more clear, they're a lot more focused, they are a lot more present for what's going on. And then there's also a lot of research in that mushroom traditionally being used for, as I mentioned earlier, neurodegenerative disorders, including Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia. So it also has been found to be very effective as a preventative in those cases as well.
Huh. Does that help, Travis?
Any suggestions and tips are much needed right now.
Okay.
Just, like I said, I'm going through a few transitions, just trying different things out. And just trying to get my mind back on the level, so.
That's good. Well, maybe that's something to check out then. And back to the whole radical mycology thing, a big part of it and some of the workshops that are going to be happening at the Convergence have to do with not just healing ourselves medicinally, but also healing our planet and micro-remediation, which I think is a big thing also for you, Peter. And I was wondering if you could talk about that. Like I read somewhere that you were using mushrooms to break down cigarette butts, for instance. How does micro-remediation work with mushrooms and mycelium?
So fungi are the great chemists of the world, and they are pretty powerful at breaking down the most complex things nature or humans have invented from wood, which is actually quite complex from a chemical standpoint, and also plastics. And a lot of our persistent, toxic, carcinogenic compounds, one of the reasons they're bad is that they stick around for a long time because most microbes and bacteria can't eat them and break them down. We now know that many fungi, especially some of the wood decomposers that already have this powerful ability to break down wood, can also naturally and fairly readily break down many of these human-invented compounds. And this has been known actually for decades. Nowadays, the big question is, how do we best apply those insights from the laboratory into the field where there's a lot less control and the weather is complicated and the rains and the temperatures fluctuate? But this whole large field of research is generally talked about as micro-remediation. It also, in my mind, has offshoots of what I call micro-regeneration. So mostly trying to apply fungi in disturbed habitats that aren't necessarily polluted, but really the soil is eroded or compromised, the wood and all the trees have been cut and everything's kind of, there's not a healthy ecosystem. We want to rehabilitate that or try to regenerate it and help speed up nature's natural recovery, with a big player in that natural recovery being fungi. And through our efforts, we can bring them in faster and grow them faster than they would naturally grow themselves.
Well, are there places where this is actually happening? Because you don't hear that much about it, really.
It's essentially in the beta testing still. There's a few anecdotes you'll hear about. Many of the studies that are a bit more popular even that have been done in the field, often their results were inconclusive, is the sort of state of affairs, but it doesn't mean that there isn't potential. It's really the problem, and this is what we said since the first Convergence, is that we need more people trying this and actually applying it and just figuring it out together as a community, as a network. The thing that happened at the first Convergence is we emphasized that so much, we came to realize later that was actually five steps ahead of most people. Most people don't even know how fungi grow or even how to grow them.
Got it.
We had to teach that first before we can get to the advanced remediation stuff. But ultimately, those skills aren't too far removed from the foundations of just general mushroom growing. And that's the great thing about it. It's once you understand how it works. In short, they're good decomposers is one way to think about it. And then they also just have some other interesting natural attributes. In water systems polluted with heavy metal, many heavy metals will stick to the mycelium. And so there's techniques where you can put mycelium sort of in the water and it'll act not quite like a filter, but more like a magnet where the metals will sort of stick to it in the polluted water system. So like near an old mine is one application. And there's some applications like this that are actually quite inexpensive and really accessible for people that know how to do it. The problem with micromediation, one of the things I sort of get on nowadays as an educator, is trying to ensure that people know, you know, the ins and outs, the limitations, and they don't walk away in their own mind or to their friends when they talk about later exaggerating what's actually possible. And that's been one of the sort of problems, I think, where there seems to be so much potential, but at a certain point there is a limit to what fungi can do. You know, really we need to address the root cause is a big part of the discussion. But in the meantime, we can certainly try to reverse some of these impacts, try to start the healing and recovery, and speed up what will eventually happen. Fungi will, you know, in the long run, they'll break down all the toxins we've ever created, you know, they'll break down all the plastics, but it might take a very, very long time. But we can speed up that process now with good training and with a level playing field. When everybody's educated equally, then we can have coherent discussions that become emergent and new insights evolve out of that, which is why, again, I personally wrote my book and am doing the school, and why we've done the convergence so long is mostly to stoke that fire and to bring people together to show what needs to be done. And that in most sciences, we're waiting for somebody else to figure it out. But really, in mycology, that's not the case. It's very unlike most other fields of study.
Yeah, it sounds like especially the neglected part and just getting the word out about it. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. This is the Recovery Zone. I'm speaking with three of the organizers of this year's Radical Mycology Convergence, Peter McCoy, Jason Scott, and Laura Kennedy. The convergence takes place this month, October 12th to 14th, or next month, actually, October 12th to 14th in Molino, Oregon, about 25 miles outside of Portland. You can find out more at radicalmycologyconvergence.com. And if you'd like to call in with questions or comments, the number is 503-231-8187. And so why do you guys call yourselves radical mycologists? What's the reason for this word radical? Okay, Peter, you're on.
it's a pretty good question, one that comes up fairly often. I leverage it on several points. You know, really where we started was trying to bring mycology into kind of more, I don't know, radical analysis of social environmental issues. And a big part of that was the remediation, saying we need to change this now. And this is almost a way of a form of activism, is to actually go and make the world healthier and not wait for the bureaucracies to catch up. I think that's very powerful and is a solutions-oriented approach to dealing with some of the world's issues, as opposed to problems-oriented or sort of negative pointing finger type of approach, which is also important to raise dialogue. And that's where we kind of came in. But as time has progressed and as we sort of realized pretty quickly, just by bringing in even a different perspective than the traditional academic approach to mycology, which is essentially how it's always been done, just doing something sort of different and sort of artsy and sort of grassroots or with a sort of DIY ethos and aesthetic behind it, that was all very, very unusual and essentially radical. I don't shy away from that. We don't shy away from that. I think it makes it more appealing to younger audiences, which mycology certainly needs younger folks involved. And then as the conversation has progressed, there's that notion that we're sort of on the extreme or more on just on the leading edge or sort of on the new frontier, the radical edge, or however you want to think about it, is also what another way to think about what we're offering. It's built on the foundations laid by the giants of mycology, whose shoulders we stand on, all these great scientists and researchers who've done so much work to just figure out what our fungi and name them for us and classify them and figure out how to do the basics of cultivation. Our generation is so lucky to just take that and run with it and go into all these crazy new directions and freewheel and make new connections, like you're saying, and just say stuff that's never been said, throw ideas together and say what if, because in a science that we know so little about, I think we have to say what if way more than in, say, chemistry, where the rules are much more rigidly set in place. If we narrowly define something, we limit our ability to think of it in new angles and to find new solutions. And fungi seem to offer innumerable solutions we've yet to tap into, and to show us that, you know, all is not lost, that there is so much more bright light coming down the pipe for the future once we work with this overlooked aspect of the natural world, this huge aspect of the natural world. And so all this, and sort of saying that, even this notion of relating to fungi and learning from them, and this is very eclectic and unusual from the traditional academic, more rigorous approach to mycology. And for me, I'm fine with that. It makes it more interesting, but also much more relatable. And I think, you know, more heart-centered and something that the average person actually can connect to more, because most people don't have a strong science mindset per se. And so it's finding all these dynamics, all these relationships, all these ways to say this matters. As I said earlier, it'll matter for a different reason depending on the person you talk to, but there's much more than can I eat it to mushrooms.
Right.
And that's where we come in, and just, again, not really being afraid to say new stuff. I mean, there's actually quite a number of sort of some plans, or the next stage of radical mycology that's in the works is even going deeper into some of these things and just trying tons of new stuff and really just trying to build a culture that it values this.
Well, it is a grassroots growing organization from everything I've been reading. But we have a caller again. Jerry, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Great. What would you like to ask?
I have a question for Peter. I know he's really promoting the convergence right now, but I'm down here streaming down in Southern California, and I had taken his class way back when. Opened up a whole new world. It's just a magical world. It's, you know, science, it's got everything.
Great.
And I'm looking forward to his Michael Logos classes to get started. I just wanted to know if he had any information on how that's coming along.
Michael Logos, You have a website, right?
Yeah, the website's mycologos.world. Folks can check it out. There's some general descriptions of the classes as they are planned out, but there's actually quite a bit is about to be announced, probably with the convergence. So I'm kind of laying low or hushing some of that right now, but lots of good things certainly in the works. The website's getting rebuilt. The placeholder website, the whole school, I don't want to spend too long on this, but it was kickstarted in December, and a part of that was a really big fancy website. What's there right now is a placeholder. So that's getting worked out, and once everything launches, sort of rebooted, it's going to be sort of fully formed. So big announcements are coming, but not too much to say right now.
Okay.
And it's going to be kind of a school, is what I get, you know. But so part of what... you know, we're running, probably getting close to the end here, but there was a bit about fungi can serve, I mean, just as you were talking about, like, working with them and stuff, I was thinking of them as fungi as partners for us, you know, like another kingdom of partners, an animal fungi kingdom. But they can also teach us socially, and you've written that they can serve as role models and allies in the struggle for social and environmental justice. And could you just talk for a moment about that, like how fungi really they exemplify that ideal, basically?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, and you know, I'm wondering if Laura and Jason might have some insights here too. But I think the fundamental core, probably the most relatable first point on those huge topics, is just that notion of the connections that they form.
Connection.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the biggest point with that is a group of fungi known as mycorrhizal fungi. So they connect the root systems of plants and a healthy forest and soil system, and literally distribute the nutrients, but also in their ripple effects, essentially sculpt the environment, determining what insects and animals live, and really they're forming the world around us through these connections and through this sort of stewarding and communication with everything in their environment and dynamically engaging. So we don't do that as humans. We extract and expect more will always be there. We don't relate. We don't connect. We don't reciprocate and give back by and large. I mean, this is a huge lesson of what fungi teach in all their relationships. It's a reciprocation, a symbiosis. And generally speaking, our modern culture is not mutually symbiotic with the world. We're sort of dominating it and you know, deleting it. And then that applies pretty easily to social aspects of making more connected communities, and whatever that word community is. I was once told in Sweden or Switzerland that the word community is a very American word. It doesn't really mean much, which I found funny, but it's just that, I mean, we can all probably relate to something like that it's this notion of being connected to people that share something similar to us, whether it's our neighbors or people that share an interest like mycology, and actually working to strengthen those bonds, because fungi show us how critical they are to not only the survival of the individual, but the entire ecosystem. And the entire world is built on strong relationships. Symbiosis is much more common than domination in the environment. You know, this is a notion going back to some of the earliest and anarchist philosophers, is pointing out that you know, power over the weak is really in the minority. It's much more about balance, as Jason said, and in relation. And there's so much to glean from that. But our modern sort of culture and technology and all these things sort of help us forget that. Fungi bring us back.
Yeah. So yeah, and I definitely get connection. I like all life being connected. And do you find that, like, Laura, for instance, when you're with your farm, that there's a sense of just connection is a really important aspect of that for you?
Yeah, for me, I look at more at, like, closing the loop on my farm. So fungi offer a great opportunity in doing that, looking at different waste streams that traditional farms produce, and the opportunity for us to use and work with fungi to close the loop and actually create a second product or offering for the community.
Nice, yeah. So in other words, like, you wouldn't have hog farm waste spilling into the waterways or something. That would have been turned into some fungal product or something, right?
Yeah, there would be a way to partner with fungi if we look at that kingdom as a valuable contributor to farm systems.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And how about you, Jason?
Yeah, well, you know, Peter said earlier that mushrooms are the chemists of nature, and, you know, I would take that a step further and kind of like the cornerstone of my work and say that they're the alchemists of nature. And to me, the definition of alchemy is the art of transmutation. And really what fungi are doing in the ecosystem is they're transmuting in a lot of cases. And so they're the great decomposers. They're breaking things down. They're taking dead and dying and rotten material and turning it into something beneficial for the forest to use and for the ecosystem to use, and it kind of furthering that that relationship. So I see that way in which we can work with the fungi just through observation, and nature in general just through observation, and how we start to remediate ourselves and our relationship with ourselves and our relationship with the community based on how they are in their natural ecosystems and how they're interacting with themselves, plus the secondary benefits that come from that as well, and the way that they're really beneficial in healing us, you know. And I think, you know, nature is impartial. It's not good or bad. It doesn't have, like, really preference other than equilibrium.
All life.
Yeah, and I think, again, the mushrooms offer that benefit by creating these really potent secondary metabolites just based on how they interact with their environment, and through observing them, observing how they're interacting with their environment, how they're creating equilibrium in the ecosystem, we can learn a lot, and we can learn a lot about ourselves, and I think just in observing nature in general in that way too.
That's cool. And one last little tiny bit before we go, I know that there's a couple of psilocybin workshops there too, and there's a lot of work being done now with using sort of psychedelics to help people. And Peter, do you just have a quick comment on that, like for a minute?
Yeah, I'll just say that we've intentionally at the convergences not focused so much on psilocybin too, because that's just another topic that has so much attention.
Right.
And we want to always highlight the
You want to like have it a broad spread.
But also bring to light the inaccessible or the new. What we're doing this year, I think, kind of does that though, where one speaker is actually a professional or PhD philosopher. So he's relating the psychoactive experience to actual traditional or many different philosophical lines of thought throughout history. And in philosophical studies, psychoactive substances are completely removed from the study of philosophy, which he finds is absurd as a professional philosopher. And so it's this interesting talk about how could it support or negate or reject some philosophical ideas. So it's kind of heady, very different approach. And then the other talk, I think, is actually quite potent and really profound, where this speaker is actually talking about how psilocybin and psychoactive mushrooms is on the back end, what we don't hear about today is being, probably going to be patented and sort of controlled by big pharma. And that's a big part of the discussion that isn't happening, with all the emphasis on the potential medicinal value of the mushrooms. And
right.
We could speak to that, but you got to look at how does big business play into all these things? And that's something that, is pretty radical to talk about.
And I think, get a grip on that. We are kind of running out of time, so I'm going to try to wrap up now. But yeah, it's important to talk about all of these aspects, and I think a lot of different topics are going to be covered at the Radical Mycology Convergence. So I just want to thank all of you for being here, and you, Peter, for being on the phone. You've been listening to three of the organizers of this year's Radical Mycology Convergence: Peter McCoy, author and founder of Radical Mycology; Jason Scott of Feral Fungi and Alchemycology; and Laura Kennedy of Rise Up Remedies. Radical Mycology is a growing grassroots organization that would have us learn from mushrooms and myceliate the world. The convergence takes place next month, October 12th to 14th in Molina, Oregon. Find out more at RadicalMycologyConvergence.com. This has been the Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. I'm Stephanie Potter, and I want to thank Tammy Dean for her fine engineering, and thank you for listening and supporting your volunteer-based community radio station, KBOO.
Listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, online at kboo.fm. It's time for Jazz Lives.